Blog Talk Radio.
You gotta love this. Who wants the ring?
Flashbulb, sparkle, we are underway.
Cannot play with them. Cannot win with them. Cannot coach with them. Can't do it. I want winners.
A new record, Michael Strahan. 22 and a half sacks. Breaks the block held by Mark Gatto.
Just put your name on it. That's all I say. Be a man or woman. Put your name on it.
Santonio with a touchdown.
I'm raising the ante. Anybody wants in, get in. Anybody wants out, get out.
Devin Hester, you are ridiculous.
That's got to be one of those top 10 plays on SportsCenter YouTube.
Emmitt Smith has eclipsed Walter Payton as the NFL's all-time rushing leader. And somewhere, sweetness is smiling.
One touchdown, we are world champions. Believe it, and it will happen.
Touchdown, Giants, with 35 seconds to go, Manning the first. And the Giants, with the most improbable win, have won Super Bowl 42.
Control yourself. Just tell them to stay calm. Let's keep our composure.
A lot of time and patience.
Good Skiller stuff. You're never too old for Skiller.
Happy New Year. It's 2015. You're starting fresh, and we are too. The best half hour of the week, you already know what it is. It's New York Sports 30, and we are back from the holiday break. I don't have a theme song. I guess that's my resolution, and I'll have to take care of it for next week, and we'll see if we can get that going. But it's our first show of the year. I'm your host, Brian Sousa. Reach me on Twitter, at BrianSausa, or you can call in live at 347-202-0508. So this first show of the new year happens to lead us right into the wild card round of the NFL playoffs. Football season is mercifully over for the locals, whether you're a Giant or a Jet fan. But the perception of these two teams is very different heading into the offseason. We'll delve deeper into coaching and managerial changes as well. I have a small thought about the 5-29 Knicks that aren't worth much of our time, as well as a little something on the Brooklyn Nets. I'm going to bring in some help to come in and rescue me, my fellow H4TV sports analyst, John DeRosa. DeRosa's going to join us in just a second. I'm actually going to bring him in right now. DeRosa, are you with me?
I'm here. Happy New Year.
Hey, Happy New Year to you too, DeRosa. How's it going, man?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
All right, so hopefully we'll have you here to stick with me through some Jets and Giants and some NFL here, and the Knicks. The Knicks is really something that me and you have spoken about on social media recently, and I kind of want to get into a little bit of what me and you were talking about because I thought that it was relevant. But first, I want to start with these local football teams and this season finally coming to an end. But first, I want to ask you, have you watched any Duke games and envisioned Jahlil Okafor in a Knicks jersey yet? Because I have.
I certainly have, and I am praying that the Knicks just lose the rest of their games and increase their chances in the lottery of getting him.
5-29, 5-77, really, what's the difference?
Exactly.
That's it. But like I said, first we are going to start with the Jets and Giants. And, you know, so the Jets are on the search for the GM and the head coach, DeRosa. So it's a little different for them than it is for the Giants, but I really think Woody Johnson's doing the right thing hiring football guys. And Charlie Casserly and Ron Wolf both are well-known and respected in the football world. And then we started hearing about Doug Marrone. Do you just give me – you have an opinion on Doug Marrone, what he did in his 2 years in Buffalo?
Well, I think, yeah, the Bills headed in the right direction, but I also don't think he's the be-all, end-all of coaching. So all this – hoopla over getting him is a little surprising to me. But he's still a coach.
I don't want to speak to him as a one way or the other whether or not, you know, the Jets should go about hiring him. He's had a little bit of a short sample as an NFL coach. Here's my problem. Why are we talking about a head coach when the GM has to come first? Up until I saw a story today that the Jets are looking GM first, I was a little worried that Woody was going to do this thing ass backwards.
Yeah, that was my thoughts too. Those are my thoughts too. You know, you have to have the GM and head coach has to be joined at the hip, and that was part of the problem with the Rex Ryan last 2 years and John Hidzik. So, yeah, I would definitely think you'd want the GM first.
You know, you force the head coach on the GM when you bring back Rex. And then when you have a chance to hire both, were you really going to bring back the head coach, bring head coach in first? I think what Woody Johnson's aim is to really take away that correlation, that's so Jets. That Jameis Winston fumble last night was so Jets. That's all I saw on social media, is that the Jets are ready to draft Jameis Winston after he fumbles the ball, the stumble fumble. So I think that's a little bit of what Woody Johnson's trying to get rid of. But I do think that the Jets are moving in the right direction, hiring football people for once instead of an executive search firm, don't you think?
Absolutely. And I believe Idzik and Tannenbaum are both really more numbers guys, which is fine, the salary cap age, but you don't make those people the GMs of the teams. If you want to have them part of the staff and overseeing things, that's one thing, but
even
GMs was a mistake, yeah.
The Jets no longer need a salary capologist. They need a football mind that can evaluate talent, and I think that there's a huge question mark as to whether John Idzik has that ability. I am glad that, you know, Woody Johnson didn't even give him the chance to decide to bring in his own head coach, even though I would argue that John Idzik had a say in bringing Rex back the second time. But we do have another team in town that things don't look all that bad for. Is it just Odell Beckham? Is it just the winning at the end of the season against the bad teams? What makes it so much more positive, DeRosa, for the Giants and the Jets heading into this offseason?
I would say it's about 90% Odell Beckham. I think he brought electricity to the team. Yeah, and you know, John Mara compared him to Lawrence Taylor on the opposite side of the ball, which, you know, in terms of the hope being there is probably, you know, close to being true. But I think it's, you know, the other 10% I will say is, you know, granted it wasn't against the best competition. The defense did pick things up at the end of the year, except for Philadelphia at the end there. But they were, getting a lot of sacks and hits on the quarterbacks, looking like the team of old that used to pressure quarterbacks all the time. So I think they're, you know, they can ride that momentum next year, and then maybe they got something.
I'm glad you said, well, the offense, with Odell Beckham and a returning Victor Cruz, you address that offensive line, and it looks like they can go from being real bad to, you know, real good pretty fast. But I'm glad that you said that about the defense. They did pick it up the last few games, albeit against, not all that great competition. But here's the thing. You know, beating Washington and beating Tennessee is great. I don't think that can cause Perry Fuel to keep his job. And if the Maras aren't going to make any move here and they're going to keep McAdoo, keep Coughlin, and keep Fuel, then you're kind of giving everybody a pass for what really, besides Odell Beckham, was a disastrous 6-10 season.
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know my feelings about the whole Coughlin situation to begin with. We've talked about it before. I've written about it. I think what happens, though, now is they're kind of stuck with Perry Fuel because, John Mara indicated that, it's up to Coughlin to keep his staff, who he wants on his staff, intact. And if you're going to say it's a do-or-die season next year, he kind of has no choice but to keep Fuel.
It's true. I have a problem with that. I have a little bit of a problem with that, DeRosa, because I know that, Tom Coughlin's the guy. He's your leader. You want him to be comfortable with his coaching staff. I get it. He came out yesterday and he really defended Perry Fuel. And he said the Giants finished fourth with 47 sacks. They had they had 25 takeaways. They were good on third down and on defense. And he picked and chose all these stats. But, we watched all the Giants games. And, when their defense really needed a stop, they couldn't get it. And I feel like somebody has to pay the price for how this team went, don't they?
Yeah, and I had a teacher in high school a math teacher used to say, statistics don't lie, but you can lie with statistics. And those sacks so sacks are a great point because they got a lot of them the last three or four games when the season was basically over already for them. And I think the reason they keep Fuel is because you can't afford to throw one game away if it's a do-or-die season for you. And if they have growing pains with people learning a new defense, he just can't afford to make a change there. So I think that's why he stays.
It seems like they're sort of, as you said, they're sort of locked into this position. But, you know, if the, it sets themselves up where if the defense struggles again next year, you know Perry Fuel's going to be gone. But I would be a little bit – that would be the one thing that would bother me if I was a Giants fan. But I think that's a good rule of thumb what your high school teacher told you because, you know, the Jets ranked sixth in the NFL in yards allowed. But we watched that defense, and they couldn't stop anybody. So, you know, it's true.
Yeah,
it's true. You can take numbers. You can take numbers and do whatever you want with them, can't you?
Yeah, and the alarming thing is, and you just mentioned it before, when the Giants even have a great game, but when they needed to make a stop, they can't do it. They couldn't do it. You know, they had a four-point lead against Dallas with 3 minutes to go, and Dallas just moved the ball down the field like it was nothing.
With
Jacksonville,
ease. Yes, they did.
Yeah, Jacksonville, at the end of that game, they just need to make a stop to win the game. They can't do it. I mean, so it's like, okay, you have a great game, but when it really comes to town at crunch time, they're nowhere to be found, and that's really what's important.
And the moment that probably bothered me the most in the entire Giants season is how many times did Russell Wilson execute a zone read with JPP crashing the middle? He keeps the ball, goes right around the edge, and they rush for 350 yards. That's what I think about every time I think about the idea of Perry Fuel staying is Seattle rushing for 350 yards and the Giants not even being able to letting them do the same thing over and over again. And that's what insanity is, doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. I couldn't believe it.
Yeah, they did a better job against Philly the last game of, I mean, it was Mark Sanchez, not Russell Wilson, but, you know, I'm saying to myself, you waited till the 16th game to figure this out? A little too late.
You know,
but
it seems fitting, you know. Well, and then the last game of the year, Geno Smith throws for a perfect quarterback rating. So, you know, it's funny that the end of the season maybe was a bit of a microcosm of how the season went for both teams. Or, of course, oh, no, now you wait until now. That's good,
yeah.
That's good timing. You know, Geno
yeah.
Smith, if Geno Smith could just be playing in the last four games of the lost season for his entire career, he might be a Hall of Fame quarterback. He only plays good the last four games when the team's already out of it. And, you know, I don't know. Is Geno Smith on the roster, DeRozan, next year as the starter, as the backup? Is he on the roster? I say he is, just because they don't owe him any money, and it's not like a savior's walking through the door.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he's a second-round pick, but with the rookie cap structure now, he's not costing him a lot. He's been there 2 years, and unless they're not picking high enough, I think, that unless they do a trade-up where – it's like an RG3 and the Rams type trade. They're not getting
yeah,
the quarterback.
Yeah, get all
the top
trade down and get all picks. Yeah, well, that's true. But you know, I would do what the Rams did before I would do what Washington did, where Washington gave up a whole host of draft picks to go get RG3, not even knowing how it's going to work out. If the Jets aren't going to be able to get one of those quarterbacks, maybe I'd keep the pick and go for Amari Cooper. But if they couldn't, I got to be honest with you, I would be inclined to trade down to somebody else and collect a whole host of picks, being that the Jets have so many holes to fill. And I don't think that they're a rookie quarterback, even if it was a Jameis Winston or a Marcus Mariota. They're not one of those guys away from going to the Super Bowl.
Oh, exactly. And with football, football is so many, you know, positions of strength you need. And like you said, when you're a top 10, you're picking in the top 10, you obviously have a lot of holes to fill. So, yeah, I would rather do a Rams thing, you know, the Rams side of it for sure, because then you can get, like you said, build up a team that way and maybe get a quarterback, you know, in a year or two. That's probably a better way to go. I totally agree with you.
There are a couple quarterbacks, right, in the later rounds. I mean, they're not going to be guys that are of the caliber that Mariota and Winston are, but the reason why I wouldn't go killing myself for the quarterback, even though the Jets need it so bad, is that the only thing worse than not addressing the position is making the wrong decision. If you overextend for one of these quarterbacks and you're wrong, that's what sets the franchise back even more than it already has been. And that's what I'd be a little bit scared of. This sounds so crazy. I would spend a very small amount of money, low risk, high reward, and sign Sam Bradford for a year, let the Jets be bad again, and then take their pick next year and get a quarterback. But that's just me being a conspiracy theorist. I don't know.
Well,
or just a low-risk type of guy.
Yeah, no, I, right? you know, And the thing is, too, with the top two quarterbacks coming out, there's question marks there. I mean, Mariota in that offense in Oregon, no one knows how it's going to translate to the NFL. And with Jameis Winston, obviously there's the maturity factor. So you don't know. It's not like Andrew Luck's coming out this year. So there's even more reason to do what you said and maybe trade down if they could and build the roster that way.
Right, and instead of forcing yourself to grab a quarterback, you know, there's not – if it's not – my point is that if it's not there, you know, it's better not to force it than to force it because you want a quick fix. And, you know, it would be it would not be in the Jets' interest to overextend themselves. But something I want to discuss is our absolutely dreadful basketball team. I've been – it's funny because from the beginning of the season, I wasn't that, you know, low on the Knicks because I thought they were going to be terrible anyway. Obviously not this terrible, but I thought they were going to be bad. And I told myself, you know, this is exactly what we need, really. But it's an eyesore. It's a nightly eyesore. Are you able to get through 48 minutes without puking is really the question.
I don't think I can get to 40 minutes, you know, just watching, let alone not puking.
Right. I know. No, it's true.
I didn't figure,
funny.
I
cover... Go ahead. No, before the Clipper game the other day on New Year's Eve, I was getting ready to go do something for New Year's and all these football games are on. I almost looked at it as a chore to have to turn on that Nick Clipper game and watch it for any extended period of time. And I'll be honest, I couldn't do it.
Yeah, I guess it just shows how stupid I am. I really thought they would at least make the playoffs this year, which the NBA, more than half teams make it, so I figured that's not asking much.
And you can do it under 500 in the East.
Exactly. I didn't see this coming at all, but I guess it just shows my stupidity.
Well, no, the very first show we did weeks ago as the basketball season was starting, I had a buddy of mine called in and he told me what will happen. The Jets had one win, and he said, "What number will be higher, the amount of wins the Jets have, or the amount of games the Knicks are above 500?" And I said, "The Knicks aren't finishing above 500. Like, you got to be kidding me." And luckily, you know, I ended up winning that one, but it really looks. Oh, man, it really looks bad. You know, but what me and you were speaking about earlier was the free agents, trying to attract free agents. And I had written about, you know, a week or two ago that the Knicks, you know, they don't want to win too many games, but it would be nice to win a couple of games just because you want to appear like a franchise on the rise instead of just this dysfunctional cluster of nonsense with guys that don't like each other and they literally can't win a game. They're quitting on the system, but... it really is just a huge disaster. It's almost like you can't really find the words. I think that the goal, correct me if I'm wrong, DeRosa, the goal is to convince somebody that this was just the perfect storm of a disaster and this isn't actually what this franchise is going to be under Phil Jackson and Derek Fisher. That's the only thing you can do, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, now your hands are tied. That's the only hope you have to get somebody to come. Absolutely. I wonder if the whole Carmelo Anthony thing too is, you know, I know that a lot of the players in the NBA speak highly of him. They respect him as a player, but I always wonder too if they really want to play with him. You know, he's known as a ball hog. He's not LeBron James who will pass the ball and very good passer. So I wonder about that too in the back of my mind.
Like a little bit about how, you know, as soon as the Lakers signed Kobe to this huge deal, you know, there was talk about guys not wanting to go play with him. But the difference is the five rings. So it's I did feel, maybe this is just because I'm a Carmelo fan, and maybe I'm being, you know, a bit naive about it, but I truthfully have always felt that, you know, with the given the requisite personnel around him, you know, that if he needed to pass the ball more because another guy was open, he would. Not that he enjoys it. He's never met a shot he doesn't like. But I think back to that 54-28 season under Mike Woodson, you know, Melo was – everybody was moving the ball. The ball just moved because the Knicks had weapons. And it's I find it difficult to judge anybody, Melo, coach, and president, when they've been inherited this mismatched personnel that isn't set for the system. So I kind of just look at this as a – purgatory where you're stuck in the middle for a year with no money to spend and no personnel for your system. And although nobody in New York wants to hear patience, that's all that we can really preach is for you to have patience with Derek Fisher and Phil Jackson, because you can't judge them based on what's going on right now.
Yeah, exactly. And you have to hope that when Phil Jackson's recruiting this summer, he takes out his 11 championship rings and says, I know how to build a team. This past year, we were stuck with a bunch of guys I didn't want. But we're getting, you know, a high draft pick. We got Carmelo Anthony, who's still a top player. It's New York City. And that's the only way you can get out of this mess.
And the one thing I will say is that now, since the Knicks ended up so badly and Tyson Chandler's helping the Mavericks to be one of the best teams in the West, a lot of people are killing that trade. And obviously, the trade hasn't worked out great. Calderon hasn't been great. We don't really know what Larkin is yet. We have the two draft picks that are the jury is still out. But, you know, I think a lot of people are playing revisionist history. You know, it's not as if Tyson Chandler's game suits the triangle one bit. It actually doesn't at all. And what Phil Jackson was doing was trying to give the Knicks a little bit of financial relief because they had none. Now, obviously, it hasn't worked out, but as soon as Chandler's contract ran out, the Knicks weren't going to re-sign him. So, what, instead of being 5-29, maybe the Knicks would be 12-22 with Tyson Chandler, and I don't think they're better off in that position, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they also got rid of Felton in that trade, too.
Thank you. Who complained about that? Nobody.
No. So, you're right. I'd rather be 5-29 than 12-22, and actually having, you know, giving them hope. I don't want any hope.
It's
I want the
true.
First pick.
No, yeah, that's it. Well, at this point, because, you know, what do I want to? You know, what's the point of even winning 25 games? You know, if the Knicks go on a winning streak and win 3 games in a row, everyone's going to look at them as an embarrassment anyway. And if you keep losing, then it's not going to change people. They're a very polarizing team. And as long as they're doing this poorly, getting a couple more wins, as sad as it is to say, it really doesn't matter, does it?
No, it's all about the long term. Long term. You got to think long term.
Now, DeRozan, we have a couple minutes left here, and we've got the wild card round of the NFL playoffs starting tomorrow. Now, I'm just going to make, you know, a pick on each game. You know, I got a little thing of what's going on. You want to discuss this with me for a minute here?
Absolutely.
So, Detroit at Dallas, the backbone of the Lions is their defense, not their offense. But if they're going to win, we better see some vintage Calvin and Stafford. And the Cowboys' best defense is their offense by keeping the ball for long stretches of time with DeMarco Murray. I say too many weapons on offense for Dallas. They still score some points on Detroit, and they win the game at home. What do you think?
I totally agree. I think that last week I was watching Detroit play Green Bay, and I think Matthew Stafford's 0-15 on the road against teams with winning records. And Detroit
doesn't
defense.
That tell you everything you need to know?
Yeah, and Detroit's defense is just not the same on the road. I'm not saying they're bad on the road, but they're just not the same as they are at home. So I think Dallas plays basically keep away. They run the ball down their throat, and, you know, I think they cruise to, you know, a 10-14-point win.
It definitely helped Dallas. They were able to rest DeMarco Murray a little bit towards the end of games down stretch. He had the hand surgery. He helped me get to the finals of fantasy, so I thank him for that. But I do see Dallas winning the game at home. Baltimore and Pittsburgh in the Steel City, classic AFC North matchup. The Ravens get Haloti Ngata back, and Le'Veon Bell is out. I guess Ben Tate will be running for Pittsburgh. My thing is the Steelers receivers against Baltimore secondary, and I still think that there's too many weapons that Ben has at his disposal. And at home, I think Pittsburgh, even without Bell, is able to beat Baltimore, but it's going to be a dogfight. What do you got?
I'm actually going upset here. I think Baltimore wins. You know, Le'Veon Bell injury is huge.
Back.
Yeah, that and, you know, yeah. Le'Veon Bell being out is huge. But
yeah.
I just I know Pittsburgh looks good, but I just don't see the toughness there. I think come playoff time now, the Ravens have that toughness factor. And I see them pulling off the upset.
That's true. And, you know, without Troy Polamalu, we've seen that this Pittsburgh defense just isn't the same. And they do have a couple of weapons, Baltimore. And if Flacco gets into a rhythm, I can see them really going out and winning this game. They split during the regular season. Baltimore blew them out in Baltimore. Pittsburgh blew them out, you know, in Pittsburgh. But I could see a, I can see a very, very close game in this one. So we're on different sides now. And the interesting one to me is, you know, obviously we have this under 500 Carolina Panthers. They're 7-8-1 and favored by 6.5 points. Never thought we'd see it. But I got to admit, I didn't think Carolina would make it here. Cam looks better after the car accident. They're going in completely opposite directions. And Cam Newton against Ryan Lindley. How far can Carolina go?
Well, we've seen it before, teams getting hot at the end of the year, like with my New York Giants a few years ago. You know, they're 9-7, went the whole way. So 7-8-1 really is not that much different from 9-7. Carolina just looks good right now. I mean, the thing against them is they'll have to play in Seattle, assuming they beat Arizona, which is not an easy place to play. So that might be the roadblock they face, but the defense is D'ing up. I mean, they look good right now.
Yeah, and I don't have a huge problem with the I understand what people think about the under 500 team getting to play a home game against a team who has a much better record. But, hey, this is what the NFL is. It places an emphasis on winning your division. If this happened every year, like we saw what happened with Seattle and New Orleans a few years ago. But if this happened every year, I could see it. But it really doesn't bother me too much. The last one is interesting to me because the enigma that is Andy Dalton gets another chance in a playoff game. But it won't be easy. Andy Dalton, DeRosa, I'll believe it when I see it. 3 playoff games, 1 touchdown, 6 interceptions. The Colts beat them 27-0 in October. I realize this is different. It's a playoff game, but Andrew Luck's going to score some points. I got Indy. Give me Indy because I don't know what Cincinnati is. They confuse me.
Yeah, I agree with you. Andy Dalton, again, I believe when I see it, just like you said. I just don't trust in him in the big game. It's in Indianapolis. Indianapolis defense plays better at home. I think, you know, I don't think it's a huge win like it was in the regular season, but I think Indianapolis wins, you know, comfortably by kind of like a Dallas game, 10 to 14 points.
They're better. There's no question that they're the better team. I don't, you know, obviously the playoffs are incredibly unpredictable, but there's some things that I just can't see happening. And you know, we've never seen Andy Dalton especially go on the road and play well enough in a playoff game to do it. DeRosa, I thank you so much for coming on with me today, man. Anytime you come on, you know, me and you could talk for the best half hour of the week. I appreciate it, man. We'll talk soon.
Anytime. Take care.
All right, take care. That's John DeRosa, my fellow H4 TV sports analyst. Very insightful, helps us out a lot every single time he comes on, so I really do appreciate that. I want to, I have the last 2 minutes, so I'm going to give you my number of the week, 29, as in the number of points the University of Houston put up earlier today in the fourth quarter of the Armed Forces Bowl. They're down 34-13 to Pittsburgh, to crumble fest. Houston scores 22 points in the final 3 minutes and 41 seconds. It goes touchdown, onside kick. They convert a 4th-and-13 for a long touchdown. They get a second onside kick. They score the tying touchdown, but they decide to go for 2, and they win it 35-34. Amazing comeback. And it's just, you know, that crumble fest for Pittsburgh is an awful way to end the season, but a great way to help gather our numbers of the week. And I want to issue my clown of the week. To end the show, my clown of the week. I wish I had a little jingle for that also. Maybe one day I'll get that. But it's got to be. Maybe this is just me. This has got to be Ndamukong Suh for stepping on Aaron Rodgers' ankle. Because, yeah, it's cold at Lambeau Field, but I'm not exactly believing the I couldn't tell the difference between his leg and the ground excuse. He's a dirty player with a well-chronicled history of being a cheap shot. First step looked like a mistake. Then he takes a second step, puts all his weight on Rodgers. And I thought the suspension was warranted. I don't care that it's a playoff game because the intent is pretty clear. The way the Lions play and Sue in general, I would have been happy to see him miss a playoff game because maybe then he finally would have gotten the point. And Ndamukong Suh, for the first time, but probably not the last time, is my clown of the week. Oregon versus Ohio State in the first ever national championship on January 12th. Oregon dismantles FSU in the second half. Ohio State comes back on Alabama. It was a great win. How about this? Michigan State comes back on Baylor, 20 points. That could have been a quarterfinal. Just saying. expand to 8. Bowl season has been entertaining and unpredictable. Expand the playoff to 8. You'll make it even better. I'll see you next week on New York Sports 30. We out.